Medical Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital, Tralee. Celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
And a warm welcome to Dr. Eamon Shanahan, who joins us on the line now. Good afternoon, Eamon. At least I hope he's on the line. He was the secretary. Ah, you're there. How are you, Eamon?
Once the connection is made.
we have noise from far and far. Great stuff.
We have indeed, yeah.
How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much indeed.
Great stuff. Well, listen, we missed you last week, but of course you very generously agreed to let us step aside for International Women's Day.
I heard the beginning of the programme. I heard from the beginning of the press. It was brilliant.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, we really enjoyed being there. Well, look, Eamon, we've a lot to catch up on because, of course, we didn't have a medical slot last week, so we might get down to business with general queries.
Indeed.
And remind people 083 300 3300 if they have a question for you. We'll start with a female, Eamon. She's 69 and has carpal tunnel on her fingers. Three fingers are affected on both of her hands, so that's six in total. It's very sore at night in particular. Could you suggest anything that might help?
Yeah, you see, carpal tunnel syndrome is essentially a mechanical problem. Now, let's step back a bit and people say, what's carpal tunnel syndrome? So the gist of this thing is that in our wrists, there's actually a relatively confined space through which all the structures pass. So we've got a bone on the back of our wrist, we've got bones on either side of the wrist, and across the front of the wrist we have a sheet of tissue, a tough sheet of tissue. That means that the space through which the muscles, tendons, ligaments, and especially the nerves pass is actually quite tight. If anything causes swelling within that space, it puts pressure on the various structures, and the nerves are particularly squashable. And the difficulty is that you end up squashing the nerves so as that the person starts getting signals being generated by the squashed nerves at the wrist, which the brain then interprets as the discomfort and pain of carpal tunnel syndrome. You can get numbness of the fingers because the signals from the fingertips themselves aren't going through to the brain, but you can get pain coming from it. In large measure, in the short term, there are a few medical conditions that kind of cause general swelling, and if you can treat those medical conditions, you can make this go away. Sometimes it's an overuse injury, sometimes it's just because people are using their hands a lot. But a lot of the time it just kind of happens. And ultimately, where it's an ongoing problem, the only way to really solve it is that sheet of tissue on the inside of the wrist, that an orthopedic surgeon would split that to create the space to take the pressure off the nerves, and then the pain goes away.
Okay, that's a very comprehensive answer. A texter wants to ask you how to get rid of a tonsil stone. I never heard of that before.
Yeah. Generally, I think it's a surgical procedure. So you can get these deposits. They're kind of dried up little bits of food along with some pustules and things, and they're quite uncomfortable. Again, it's a purely mechanical problem, and I suspect the only way to get rid of it is just to have it removed surgically.
Okay, right, which of course nobody wants to do, but there's no alternative, no?
Yeah, that's about it, exactly. I mean, it's literally a lump of stuff inside the back of the throat. Uncomfortable, unpleasant, generally not dangerous, but unfortunately the only way of getting rid of it is to get rid of it.
Okay, I never heard of a tonsil stone. Are they common?
Yeah. Uncommon, to be fair. You rarely see it. I can't remember the last time I saw one myself.
Now, a listener says, will you ask Eamon, my mother is 76 and has swollen legs. They're kind of purple-blue colour in the lower leg. The doctor has told her she has water in her veins. What could be the cause of this? She is also underweight, so it's not caused by being overweight.
No. Interestingly, the underweight might actually have something to do with it. So there is this balance that goes on in the legs between blood coming into the legs, blood's leaving the legs, and any excess fluid being carried out of the legs. So what I mean by that is that as the blood leaves the heart, goes down into the legs, so the lowest part of the body, a certain amount of fluid from the blood, the serum as we call it, oozes out between the blood vessels and ends up in the tissues. There are channels that are supposed to carry this excess fluid back, and for most people they do carry the excess fluid back. The difficulty is that for some people that doesn't work the way it should. One of the things you'd wonder about if somebody is underweight is that there may be an issue in terms of the amount of protein they have in their bloodstream, because protein acts as a kind of a sponge to keep the fluid inside the blood vessels, and if somebody is malnourished or underweight, they may not have enough protein in the bloodstream, and this might lead to a swelling of the ankles. If memory serves me correctly, and it's outside my area of expertise, I think you'll see this in this horrible tropical condition called kwashiorkor, where people get grossly swollen because they have very little protein in their bloodstream. But there are other reasons that will cause it as well. They can be caused if people got varicose veins. It can be a result of illness and sickness generally. So there are a variety of causes for it. People often say, after, look, we'll give you a water tablet, a diuretic, that'll draw the fluid out. It doesn't actually, it dehydrates the person, and you pass excess fluid out of the body, excess salts out of the body, so that leads to more problems. So that's not necessarily the solution. What you're trying to do is find out what's the underlying cause and deal with it that way.
Now, here's an interesting one, and again, this is one a lot of people can identify with. A texter says, I don't have COVID, but I keep coughing at night. What can I take for it?
Actually, I'm seeing a lot of that. A lot of people who have these persistent tickly coughs, irritation in their throat and so on. And I think it's certainly been a feature of the coughs and colds we're experiencing this year, is that people are having ticklish coughs for weeks and months afterwards. Now, on the presumption that the person is not a smoker, on the presumption that they're not losing weight hand over fist, on the presumption that they're not coughing up blood, in other words, that they don't have any signals of anything bad or dangerous going on, most of them is just an irritating cough. What you can do in the first instance, about maybe talk to your chemist, because there are a number of the so-called linctuses, and a linctus is usually a liquid that will help stop cough. It literally just takes away the irritation from the throat. If it continues to be a problem, you may need to see your GP. My own particular practice has been that I'm giving people inhaled steroids. I don't want to give steroid tablets, but I'm giving inhaled steroids as a means of relieving the irritation and taking the cough away.
Okay, very good. Now, here's one again that I think is rather topical given the weather at the moment. It's from Martin, who said, I would like you to put this to Eamon. I find the days like today, my mood is really low. The weather really gets me down. Nobody takes it seriously. I can be in much better form when the weather is good. Is this a thing? That's how Martin puts it.
Yeah, seasonal affective disorder. Sad. Has been certainly known about. I remember my professor of psychiatry in UCC nearly 40 years ago was talking about this, so it's a thing. Now, Professor Daly did look at the incidence of depression year-round and didn't find a direct connection, but I've certainly met many people down through the years who would find that their mood is reflected in the weather, and on the dull, dreary, grey, miserable days, that their mood isn't great as a consequence. I think it depends very much on the individual, it's easier to get out and around. It goes back to, I suppose, the whole topic of mindfulness. How do we distract our minds from the worrying thoughts we have inside our heads? Nearly everybody has worrying thoughts inside their heads, but we find ways and means of distracting ourselves. It's much easier to do when it's a bright sunny day than when it's a grey miserable day and you're stuck inside.
This is it. And I suppose the only thing to say to poor old Martin, because I find the weather gets me down as well, and I think it's so common, is I always find this time of the year is that I'm kind of counting down until the hour goes forward again. And to know that it will be brighter in the evenings around 7 and 8 o'clock. And there is some consolation in that.
The end of the month, isn't it? Not that far away.
Yeah, Sunday week as far as I know.
Oh, very good.
Okay, Eamon, we'll take a short break and we've more questions for you coming in, and we have room for a few more. So if anyone wants to text in, we're on 083 300 3300. Medical Matters after this Suspiog.
Medical Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Bonsecours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
And if you've just tuned in, we are chatting to Dr. Eamon Shanahan for this week's Medical Matters. Eamon, we've another question about fingers. Yeah. This is from a 69-year-old woman. Her ring finger gets blue and numb at times and very sore. She's wondering what's causing this.
Yeah, possibly that she has a bit of Raynaud's, R-A-Y-N-A-U-D-S. It can affect, it tends to affect fingers, but may affect a single finger. The classic one is the finger goes blue and cold and uncomfortable, and then it becomes sometimes white, and then eventually becomes red and hot and more uncomfortable. And what it is that it's like a super sensitivity to cold, and for individuals who've got this, even when the temperature is not particularly cold, the blood vessels in the skin go into spasm, which initially causes the fingers to become a bit red and then a bit blue and then bloodless, and then as the blood comes back into the fingers, it goes red. And if anybody's had the experience of falling asleep on their arm and they wake up and they've got that horrible pins and needles on their arms, that's exactly what they're talking about. I think the best thing to do is talk to your own GP about this, because depending on the situation, there is medication, there is treatment you can get to help relieve this.
Now, a male in his mid-70s has been in touch, Eamon. He's getting a pain down his right leg, sciatica, and possibly a trapped nerve. He's wondering what can be done for that besides physio.
Yeah. Okay, physio is always extremely useful in this situation. The mainstay of treatment is using anti-inflammatory medication of some sort, the theory being that there is an inflammation somewhere along the track of the nerve, putting pressure on the nerve, causing the symptoms that you're experiencing as the sciatica. And that's essentially it. Now, where the problem is intractable and goes on over a long period of time, and by a long period of time, you're talking about sort of 6 months or more, it might be useful, and it can be occasionally useful to use the so-called pain management techniques, whereby you would see a pain specialist, a specialist who manages these things, and they would inject anesthetic agents in and around the nerves in the back, and that can be helpful. Exceptionally rarely, if the person has signs that not only do they have the pain because of the pressure on the nerve, but they're getting a weakness of a leg, so they get a condition called a foot drop, or indeed even more seriously, if they get a condition where it appears that there's pressure being put on the nerves leading into the pelvis, so if the person is having problems with their bladder or their bowels, a condition called Caudaquinet syndrome, under those circumstances, a back surgery would be carried out, but it's only a tiny fraction of the people with backache end up having to have back surgery.
Female age 70 has developed a cyst on the back of her knee. She has some pain in it, and she's worried that, is it anything serious?
Generally not serious, but it's an uncomfortable and unpleasant thing, and she probably needs to see an orthopaedic surgeon. So the thing she has is a thing called a Baker cyst, I'm sure named after somebody, Baker, B-A-K-E-R. What it is that there is a sac around the knee that maintains a small little bit of super slippery fluid that helps to lubricate her knee joint. Sometimes some of that fluid escapes out between the muscles at the back of the knee, and it causes a cyst to develop, and over time this can get to be quite a large size, and in turn then start putting pressures both on the back of the knee but actually down into the top of the calf, and that occasionally can get to a very large size. If it's like that, exceptionally rarely, again, you may need to have surgery to help relieve that. Fortunately, in most cases, it goes away of its own accord, but you may well need to see an orthopaedic surgeon about that.
Now, we're back to the cough again, Eamon. A Killarney listener has an 11-year-old with a dry cough for the last few weeks and wants to know, could you repeat the name of the syrup you mentioned to stop the cough?
Okay, so the thing that the syrup that I was suggesting was, it's generically referred to as a Linctus. Now, I'm a bit uncomfortable about giving a Linctus to a child. Linctuses may cause constipation, so you definitely don't want that in a child. It's okay for adults, but maybe not so suitable for children. I also said that my own particular practice is to use inhaled steroids, and this can be very useful. My own view is that if somebody has a cough if you have a cough that's producing phlegm and it's over a relatively short period of time, and again that your chest is well otherwise, there may well be a short term bacterial or viral infection that's causing that. But if it's going on for weeks and weeks and weeks, it means that there is an inflammation or an irritation of the pipes, and you need something to relieve that inflammation. That's why the reason I'm suggesting using the inhaled steroid. The point being that you're delivering tiny, tiny doses of the medication directly into the airways where it is needed, and such tiny doses that it's not going to cause an effect on the rest of the body.
Now, a lady gets in touch, Eamon. She doesn't give her age, but we can assume she's of menopausal age. She says she has no energy, no motivation, feeling constantly tired. She was put on HRT last June. It seemed to work for a while and gave her loads of energy, and she felt like she had her life back. But in the last few months, she's feeling flat again. She also has a constant bitter metallic taste in her mouth for the last 8 months, and is wondering, could that be something to do with taking HRT? So there's kind of two parts of that question.
Not that I'm aware of is the quick answer. Not that I'm aware of. though I wouldn't claim to have huge expertise. I mean, I'm hugely, hugely in favour of and I've always been in favour of women using HRT. But it's not a symptom that I'm generally aware of. I think the thing is that it's interesting that she did get the benefit from the HRT at start, and that clearly was where the HRT was doing what it was supposed to do. It was replacing the estrogen that she didn't have herself. The question is, at this stage, does she need to have the dose of the HRT changed, or indeed is there something else going on. So one way or the other, I think she needs to go back and talk to her own GP about that.
Okay, and another listener's been on and says she's 47, she's getting numbness in her fingers, which can stay for 10 to 30 minutes, as well as sometimes a popping sensation in her head as if she's receiving a shock, and she's wondering what that could be.
I don't know if there's any immediate connection between the two of those. The numbness in the fingers, again, I was talking about the Raynaud's earlier on. Maybe it's Raynaud's. I mean, that's something that I think does warrant being seen about. There's no obvious connection, but at the same time, you can never be sure. Do talk to somebody and get it checked out.
Okay, now this next one is going to be a very hard one for you to answer, Eamon, but it's a person who wants to know, what's the prognosis for a male in his early 30s diagnosed with MS? Well, you'd have to know the person and you'd have to know the details.
Yeah, and I think the answer is it varies. Now, I'm not trying to be evasive, but I think, to be fair, it's very difficult for anybody, even the specialists, to be able to prognosticate in a disease like MS, a horrible condition like MS. I've seen the spectrums. I've seen young men and young women who have developed MS and have died within 2 and 3 years, and I have patients who have had MS for over 30 years and are still functioning quite well. So it does very much vary. I think the only indicator is how rapidly is the disease progressing in the individual, in the sense that it tends to be sort of different speeds. Is it progressing rapidly or is it progressing slowly? Is the person becoming rapidly disabled or are they not really getting disabled? And that might give you some indication. I don't know if there's anybody can actually answer that one for you, unfortunately.
Texter wants to ask you, how long does it take to get results from CUH for a sputum sample?
It depends on who ordered the test for you. And the reason I'm saying that is that if your GP sent up the sputum specimen, generally when the laboratory has the test ready, they will email the result directly to your GP. If, on the other hand, it was ordered through one of the hospital clinics, the result goes back to the hospital clinic, it doesn't come back to the GP, and it'll take a while, and it does take a while for it to work its way through the system. And it's actually just purely literally the snail mail, as it's literally handed from person to person before a report is eventually generated and sent out.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, listen, Eamon, we've got to leave it there because the time is up, unfortunately, but thank you for going through all of those. Eamon, we'll chat to you next Wednesday and enjoy St. Patrick's Day festivities in the meantime.
Indeed. All right, Catherine. Thank you very much.
Bye for now. Bye, Eamon.